And now a reading from Mary Moody Emerson's letter to her nephews, Waldo and Charles, dated January 22, 1831. The winds sweep over the winding sheet of nature as though they were the dirge of her children. A dim corpse light hides moon and stars, one unvoiced wail, nothing to figure the dread past and more wondrous future. No melancholy ghost of the dead renowned to whisper aught of thy sunless realms. And thou, old time server, who are blabbing the same hour that thou didst when liberty first fired on thy countrymen, how forever the same, how forever turned to the present.
I confess to being on fire this morning. I'm newly landed from Nice, where my first screenplay, The Silent Seed, has won Best Unproduced Script at the International Film Festival. And, well, thank you, oh enlightened congregation. And so I am crazy enough to think Mary is now behind everything in my life. She is paving the way for the screenplay I'm writing about her life. So a funny thing happened on my way back to Harvard. I spent 13 years turning First Parish Church of Newbury into an environmental center and was thrilled to see your green congregation and applaud you for your environmental consciousness and efforts. So having done that, I crawled back to Harvard after many years and said, remember me? They said, no. I said, well, remember my dissertation? No. Well, I'd like to finish it. Okay. So I have returned. And so there I am sitting at my kitchen table writing, get ready to yawn, divining Emerson's natures, unearthing his edification in grief. And someone starts knocking on my window. I have a hummingbird feeder right outside my kitchen window. And I was ignoring it for a long time, thinking, well, you know, I know I've lost my mind a long time ago. This is just another iteration of that. But then, you know, more knocking happened, and in my refreshing my research, I came across newly transliterated journals by, I'll call Ralph Waldo Emerson Waldo through this sermon, through Waldo's letters and journals. And I looked again out my window, and I saw the author of those letters and journals, Mary Moody Emerson. And I am so hooked, I cannot tell you. I drove to Sleepy Hollow Cemetery and I cursed every tourist that was laying an acorn, sorry, Henry, on Henry's grave and then going and paying homage to Hawthorne, and then turning that corner to the grand granite stone right past this little unassuming tombstone. And I stood in front of her tombstone, and I swear it started vibrating. And she said, well, it took you long enough. And I vowed to her that I would not only raise awareness about this genius that was buried unknown and who inspired everything, no bias, and write a screenplay about her to bring her to life on the big screen. And so she began almost every conversation with, how is thy soul? Oh, not that of which Paul speaks, but thy poetic. Now, to me, these are the words of a writer. And she continued, writing in a letter to Waldo in 1821, the spirits of inspiration are abroad this day. I have rode only to go out and see the wondrous aspect of nature. Do we love poetry as we do the flowers of the field? Fancy celestial gift is to the mind what those are to the earth. Well, I'm sure most of you know your own history in Concord and the Emersons and the Old Manse. Well, Mary was born there in 1774, literally on the eve of the American Revolution. Years later, when she met Lafayette, she boasted that she was a babe in arms at the Revolution. Well, her father, Reverend William Emerson, left for Fort Ticonderoga to serve as chaplain. He and Mary's mother had five children, and Mary was two at the time, and mother had an infant, a brand new infant. And so it was determined that to unburden Mary's mother, she would be sent temporarily to live with her grandmother and aunt in Malden. And she was to return home when her father came home. But he did not. He died in 1776. Mary's mother called grandmother to take Mary home. But her grandmother found Mary just a little too useful. And she persuaded her mother to let her keep her until she was 18. So Mary Moody Emerson, exiled and abandoned, spent what she called her lonely childhood of slavery, poverty, and ignorance, and long orphanship, separated from her family and her beloved father forever. Now, that might have been the end of an ordinary girl. Mary was anything but. I hope you have read Robert Richardson's biography of Waldo, Mind on Fire. If you haven't, it is marvelous. So, Mind on Fire, that certainly describes him. But, you know, a fire, as Sarah and I learned this morning, doesn't easily start. It comes from somewhere. Waldo's fire comes from Mary. Now, in the dark years of childhood, Mary found one old ragged book. No cover, no title, just this massive old rag of a book. She probably learned to read at her Aunt Rebecca's dame school, who had given up the school because she was beginning to go insane at that time. So Mary's education was interrupted. Still, Mary taught herself to read, and she devoured what she would later learn was Milton's Paradise Lost and memorized it. Her mind was ravenous. She educated herself, reading literature and philosophy and history and classics, while her brother attended Harvard. It's likely her brother William met his future wife Ruth, Waldo's mom and dad, at Grandma's house in Malden. Well, they will marry and have children, Waldo among them. Now, at that time, women had no voice. They were not allowed to speak in church, and they were meant only to serve. Nevertheless, she persisted. By the time Mary was 17, she's caring for her very elderly grandmother. Aunt Rebecca, who is certifiably insane, and her husband, who contracted an illness that sent him into violent fits. A happy childhood, I would say. Mary, when she was 18, escaped this life of misery to her sister's house in my hometown of Newburyport. She told her sister, "I must have a place to exist in." But finding it just seemed impossible. Mary first fell in love with the ocean in Newburyport and Plum Island. First time outside of books. Well, her sister immediately sent her to work in the nursery. So at 19, Mary fled. An outsider, sealed for life, an outsider from her family and from the world. She, uneducated or self-educated, would come back to Concord and tutor the Emerson boys into Harvard. Yet she wasn't allowed to attend their graduations because she lacked social graces and might embarrass the family. Quote, "It is so universal with all classes to avoid contact with me that I really blame none." Nevertheless, the century had turned. Old Calvinism gave way to the great Second Awakening, and Romanticism wafted across the ocean from Wordsworth and Coleridge, capturing Mary's imagination. But it was her writing that captured Waldo's. Through letter after letter to him, she became his muse. A year after he began his famous journal keeping, she sent him a letter quoting a German female writer. He copied sentences from both without attribution into his senior essay, which won The Present State of Ethical Philosophy. But this was just the beginning. Waldo started copying all of Mary's letters into his journal under the name Tamuria. It was an anagram he made up from Aunt Mary. Now, as he continued his traditional path, little strange, isn't it? She became more quirky, more solitary, a real pilgrim. She wrote, "I had rather live a wandering life and die a beggar than drag down to active littleness." Mary rejected marriage and the security and sense of belonging. I mean, this would give her a home and a social place and a life and food. She was sought after. She was adorable, I guess, like 5'4" and blonde wild hair and a total spitfire. Ran, she never walked, but she rejected everyone. And she wrote, and she was the first to write, that she has decided to dance to the music of my own imagination. Oh, she paid dearly for refusing to conform to society's norms and watching her suffer the consequences really sparked Waldo's self-reliance and his ideas of nonconformity, which of course passed along to Thoreau and Walden. She believed her integrity was worth the sacrifice. So she received this pittance of an inheritance and purchased a farm in the White Mountains of Maine that she called Elmvale. The deed read, "Mary Moody Emerson of Concord, a single woman." This would become her sanctuary, where she really communicated with nature and was fed spiritually and emotionally and inspired prolific writing, thousands of pages of journals, almanacs, as she calls them, and thousands more letters that are just now coming into the world. Waldo wrote to a Harvard friend, "My aunt, who is alone among women, has spent a great part of her life in the country, an idolater of nature, and counts but a small number who merit the privilege of dwelling among the mountains." But Mary wouldn't stay put for long. She was restless and she wanted to learn and write. So she leased her farm to her sister and brother-in-law, who would later steal the farm from her, so that she could live a life of itinerant theologian, philosopher, every time she heard that a well-known minister was in town, meaning Boston or Concord or Newburyport, she would dash and knock on that door and confront that minister with question after question after question until the minister was totally tongue-tied and felt he knew nothing. She confronted every bright light, leaving the most intelligent in her wake. Mary was the original nasty woman. So consumption was ravaging New England, including her family at the time. And every loss Waldo and their whole family suffered, all of Waldo's brothers except Bulkley, including Waldo's young wife, then his second wife's young son, it just became a train of Emersonian grief. Mary looked around and saw all this grief and saw all these broken people, and she went back to Elmvale and she confronted Mother Nature. And she said, "Oh no, you are not going to take my soul. You can take my nephews, you can take my parents, you can take everything and everyone from me, but you will not take my spirit." So she started wearing a shroud, and she started sleeping in a coffin, not to be morbid, to taunt death and show death that it had nothing on her. So Waldo started calling her our angel of death. She walked so intimately with death, passers-by would joke, "I wish you the joy of the worm," and giggle past. They thought she was obsessed. She was obsessed with life. And having the courage to face death made her feel intensely alive. And when she was 81 years old, Thoreau called her the youngest person in Concord. Not only a genius, but the wittiest and most vivacious woman. I know he would be thrilled to yield one day to Mary Moody Emerson during his birthday month. So Waldo, as she got older, begged her for her journals. Now, she already knows that her writing is showing up in these published essays of his, and he's becoming famous, and she's not. He begged her. There are at least 30 letters of him begging her for her journals. And she finally said, "No. These are my home. These are the only sign that I existed." Now, 2 years before she died, she gave them all to Waldo's daughter, Ellen. And Ellen is why we have them today, with the name Mary Moody Emerson attached to them. Ellen came home with all these bundles of journals, euphoric, describing Mary as ageless, riding horseback with her shroud flowing behind her, rosy skin that never wrinkled, and bobbed yellow hair that never was tamed nor grayed. But she was almost buried in Malden. One saving grace, Waldo stepped in and said, "Oh no, she will be buried in Concord in the new garden cemetery in the palm of nature's hand." And he eulogized her in a talk to the Women's Club of Boston under the title Amita, which is Latin for aunt. So he's going on in this beautiful eulogy, and finally, Elizabeth Peabody in the back row turns to her friend Sarah Ripley and says, "Damn it, he's talking about Mary." Her eulogy. And it's here that he quoted the advice she gave to everyone, including every child she met. "Scorn trifles, lift your aims, do what you are afraid to do." Well, so here we are. Aren't you hungry to see her and to see her come alive and to hear her words and to capture her spirit? Now, I started this project a year before the last presidential election. Now, first, I thought Mary was calling me just to put her on the map, give her the agency and influence she deserved. But now I believe that our unknown genius has a more pressing message for us. Oh, a more pressing message for us. While we know there's always more work to do, you know, I am guilty of taking the rights we'd gained as women and as humans a little bit for granted. It's easy when you're comfy and have what you need. Now that they're being threatened, I realize how precious our rights are. Just the thought of losing ground highlights our vulnerability. And I'm sure you can empathize with me, with our counterparts around the world who are living with even greater vulnerability and oppression. Before Katy Perry sang it, Mary Moody Emerson said, "You have a voice. Go and roar." I intend to show you her pilgrimage, but this is our pilgrimage. Mary urges us, live the great truths of your story. Live so that your life's pilgrimage emboldens the person next to you and behind you and in front of you for generations to come. This is our time.